handle the truth.
The Denise Simon Experience. The Truth Matrix. Vetting, exposing, drilling down to the truth.
Rolling Thunder, this is Hitman, see you at over. Hitman, this is Rolling Thunder, see you at out.
The Denise Simon Experience. Exposing politics, lies, demagoguery, spin, fraud.
Grid to suppress, Mike Charlie, 435-921. Grid to mark, Mike Charlie, 473-989, out.
Promoting individual situational awareness. Question, probe, notice, ask why.
Mark smoke on the deck, two rounds HEBT. TOT 53.
And now, the Denise Simon Experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're so pleased that you stayed with us here on the Denise Simon Experience. Holly Swenson, who's now becoming a frequent guest because the topics are so important, and the author of Stop, Drop, Grow, and Glow, has agreed to be with us. Because we're going to talk about renting moms. You know, I suppose we could just rent anything, you know, rent cars and have things delivered and have somebody else do our lawn. Hello, Holly. Welcome back.
Hi, Denise. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a nice thing to say that we're having a concierge service at the college level.
Yes.
But it's really just kind of renting somebody. And. To do the grocery shopping and, you know, make your nail appointments and doing your laundry, because these college students are not prepared to do all these things on their own. Did I get some of that right?
Well, I think it depends. I think there are some services that definitely do more of that. I think it depends on, you know, if this is a service. I mean, I do, you know, what does this concierge mom concept is, it's designed to support parents who are sending their kids off to college, who, you know, maybe you live on the West Coast and you're sending your kids to, you know, the East Coast for school, and, you know, they're thousands of miles away, and it's really, you know, they're trying to have it feel more like an extended family, and so that's kind of the concept, and so that's kind of how this was born, and I think it's definitely an interesting topic and an interesting thing for families to consider, but yeah, it's definitely a new frontier, I think.
Well, I guess for, you know, kids that are completely unprepared, it may be a necessity. And I don't know what the hourly rate is. I saw one that was like $49 an hour.
Yeah, so the one I was seeing, it's $49 for a month, which seems actually quite affordable. $250 for a semester, $450 for a year, and $1,600 for all 4 years. And this is the one Mindy Knows, which is based in.
I see that one.
Yeah, so that's what this one. So and the other thing is, you know, so what they're saying that they don't do, they aren't washing the clothes. They're not, you know, making them dinner. And so they really want these kids to still be, you know, learning their own autonomy, their own independence, and how to, you know, have these life skills. And so they say they're not trying to step in on those skills per se, but really be more of a buffer. Like if their kids are getting, you know, if the kid's sick and they want to bring them chicken noodle soup or help them, you know, pick up a prescription or find a local doctor. It's kind of a, you know, an interesting concept, I think. And the one thing where I definitely think, you know, this is a time in life where you do need to be stepping out and developing independence. But I thought that this could be kind of a neat stepping stone for some families that feel like they need this, or maybe the students feel like they need it, you know, or even for a freshman, you know, where you're going from having been at home and then you're moving, you know, thousands of miles away and you don't have family or you don't have friends, you know, nearby, where if something goes wrong, you have kind of a lifeline, or you have someone you feel like can step in and at least give you a hand if you need it.
I guess there are those that would necessarily need these kinds of things, but I would argue that let's kind of go back to at least high school, you know, particularly in your junior and senior year, you have counselors, and these counselors will help you take the classes that you absolutely need to have in order to graduate. But more than that is to prepare you for, you know, life after mom and dad. You know, and then, you know, as a freshman, there are all kinds of counselors that are available for, you know, really no charge. And, you know, I think almost always you have to live in a dorm in your freshman year. At least that's been my experience with my kids. And, you know, you got dorm parents or dorm guidance people. You know, there's things that are already in place, Holly. So I guess this Mindy Knows thing is for those that didn't have some of those benefits through high school and as a freshman in college. Is that about right?
Well, I think perhaps, you know, and I definitely think, you know, like you said, I don't necessarily think this is a service for everyone. And, you know, I was independent. I was ready to, when I was, you know, that age, move out. I didn't feel like this is, that's something I would have necessarily wanted or needed. But I think, you know, what has kind of softened me to this idea a little bit more, because I kind of got the wheels turning for me of like, is there actually a need for this? And mm-hmm. So one thing that I came across that I think is really worth sharing is that studies show that loneliness is more prevalent in young people. So from the ages of 18 to 29, the highest rates of loneliness are reported in that age group. And I would not have guessed that. And so and the other piece of this is that this is a longstanding public health crisis. So even predating COVID, that this is something that actually has been an issue for a long time, but people, I don't think a lot of people even, it's even on the radar. So I think it's this time for, you know, kids who are discovering who they are, they're stepping out, they're leaving their family, their friends, their safety net, to start figuring this out. But I think that there's emotional stress and there's, worry and that sort of thing that comes with, you know, leaving home, that's normal. But I think if, you know, a service like this is something that could offer just a little bit of a buffer. And like I said, I think especially as a freshman where, you know, it's also new, it kind of gives you just a little bit of a handholding to get you feeling more independent. I think it's kind of a clever idea. I don't necessarily think it's for everyone, but I think for some families, it might really give them a little peace of mind.
Well, I know that, you know, when you get ready to go off to college and you got to go live in a dorm, often, you know, there's all these questions, you know, the dorm that you're going to live in, who's going to be your roommate, what your, you know, hobbies and what your background and so forth is like. So they try and match you with, you know, the best person that would be your roommate or your suite mate or whatever it may be. So, you know, I can understand there may be a little bit of loneliness, but the systems, from what I can see, even, you know, regardless of the size of the school, there are things that are in place to keep that loneliness from happening. You know, activities that they can join in. There are things that, you know, that happen in the dorm, on campus, off campus. And so I guess as a stopgap, or maybe as an insurance policy, suppose that you hire concierge. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that's kind of interesting to note is that, you know, this isn't necessarily a daily thing. I mean, they might go months in between seeing these kids, depending on what the needs are. So it's not necessarily like a daily check-in. It's more just, like you said, an insurance policy. If something comes up, or if, you know, they're feeling like they need more help 1 week, or, you know, whatever. It's just nice knowing you have a lifeline, I think, if you need it, especially as a young person. But I am all for building autonomy and independence and learning those skills. And that is part of, you know, going off to college. So I think if you be careful, I think, you know, you don't want too much of a good thing, because then you don't learn those skills. But I think, you know, for some families, it might feel like a good first step to have a little more of a buffer.
Should it be a situation where, you know, we may need to change up the life skills, perhaps, or even having classes like life skills at the high school level, so there is some bit of independence that they can gain, that they don't necessarily have to rely on, you know, somebody else? Do you think that there's a help in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that also can start at home too. I mean, I think, you know, you have to start, you know, your kids are going to launch, and so they need to have some of these life skills, you know, like teaching them, you know, like they've not been doing their laundry, you know, get them doing their laundry, bill pay, you know, if they're paying bills, how to, you know, keep a budget, you know, if they need to make a doctor's appointment, you know, make sure you've got one established before you go off to college so that you can, you know, you've got somebody you can call if, you know, something comes up, you know, those things, you know, those are things you have to deal with as you become an adult. And so you need to, you know, you need to have those skills. And I think you definitely starting them before they leave for college would be wise.
I'm looking that there's actually an organization, Concierge Services for Students, and this is in Boston, interestingly enough. And their services for the concierge is much more comprehensive. As I said, you know, doing laundry and grocery shopping, you know, making appointments, gym memberships, you know, instead of necessarily having to call an Uber, there's car services, or maybe they, you know, help you with Uber, party planning, travel, storage, decorating. So, I mean, besides Mindy knows, I mean, there are other services, other companies out there that are taking it to a much wider description here, where, you know, the expenses, you know, I think it was like $49 an hour I was looking at on this one particular one, and as opposed to $49 a month. So, you know, they'll help you with campus tours and all that. But, you know, the school assistants, all that stuff is there. I mean, they try and make it very enticing, especially when you decide which school you're going to go to. You know, you get put into these groups and they try and sell you all the benefits of, you know, Northwestern over, you know, University of Oklahoma kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think that, I think, like I said, I think we have to be careful we're not doing our kids a disservice if, you know, some of those services are more extravagant. And so I think there is an element of, you know, your kids do need to grow up and they do need to figure some of this out. And sometimes the only way to do that is to really live it. And you've got to, you know, kind of walk through that, because if we aren't allowing our kids to take on that autonomy, they're going to struggle as they get older. I mean, they're not going to, you know, you have to embrace those parts of life to kind of overcome them and to grow as a human being.
Well, I think that there's necessarily a little bit of role playing that needs to happen at home, especially, you know, if you're in high school and you have an after school job, or you do volunteer kind of stuff. You know, there's some independence that's gained with all of that and learning a schedule and responsibilities to, you know, keep up your grades and, you know, keep organized and, you know, keep a social life. I mean, that's not necessarily role playing. It's real playing, but it also can be role playing, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I, like I said, I think starting it younger for them in high school, especially, I mean, hopefully before that, I mean, just with little things like, you know, learning organization, responsibility. I mean, those things are important. Those are important life skills to have. And I think the more you practice them and role model and role play and that sort of thing, the stronger and more capable your children are going to become. And so I absolutely agree that I think starting that stuff before, you know, pre-college for sure, is really a smart idea.
I think some of these parents almost need to hire their own concierge. I think, you know, there was a trend out in California for a while that, you know, adults were hiring life coaches. So I was seeing such feebleness and, you know, I don't know where this is all necessarily coming from that you've got to go, you know, hire somebody else. It just seems like we're giving in to, people that are needy, and that makes them even more needy. And I'm a little disappointed in some of this, but I suppose, you know, in order to somehow fix that, you need a concierge.
Well,
or a life coach.
Well, and I think too, the one thing I think people are missing, I think we're becoming more isolated, right? I mean, isolation is an issue we've got, and I think depression and anxiety and these things. And so I think people are looking outside of themselves to try to fill some of that that need. And I think we're losing that human-to-human connection and the community piece. And so I can see how some of this stuff might feel helpful or supportive, or you're trying to grow as a person, or you're trying to have extra support. But I wish that as a world community, or, you know, whatever, that we would start just taking care of each other. And I think making more opportunities to come together as people, because I think people are lonely. And I do think that there's definitely improvement in our society and a room for improvement, for us to start creating more opportunities for people to feel like they're part of something more than just, you know, themselves, if that makes sense. So I think that I can see why maybe people are gravitating towards this kind of service, but I think maybe it's not all for the best, you know, reason, if that makes sense.
Is this a situation, do you think, that it may be based on the distance that the student is from the parents when they're at college, or is it the size of the school, or the fact that, you know, they may be necessarily living at home, but, you know, taking night courses? I mean, is this a broad kind of offering that you're seeing, or is it maybe somewhat isolated?
Well, it seems like, I think for the long distance, especially, you know, I think, you know, kind of, as I mentioned earlier, I think, you know, when your kid's going, you know, across the country for school and you're not there if something comes up, or, you know, they don't have family or friends and they're, you know, so far away, that to know that somebody's got your kid back if something comes up, I think that that can be valuable. And you know, paying for peace of mind. You know, I think that the distance piece is a huge part of it.
I don't know. This one bugs me. But, you know, I can see that, I suppose, that there are some parents out there that are fine with this. I'm actually looking at another service that's called Tay Lifestyle Management. And they're talking about the emotional roller coaster, and, you know, their family took care of them their entire lives, and now they're kind of thrown out there. But we'll help you with your shopping, and we'll help you furnish your dorm or your your apartment. We'll get care packages and, you know, those other kinds of things. Goodness, Holly, I mean, I would think by the time you're 18 and you can take an SAT test or an ACT test, you've pretty well figured some of this out.
Right.
There's something here that I don't know. I'm struggling with this one.
Well, and I think there's also some, you know, I think it also is a fun time in life to start figuring some of this out for yourself, you know, like going and getting your own groceries and going out and, you know, not having someone over your shoulder, you know, mom or dad, you know, barking at you for this or that. And so it's, I think it's also fun to try to kind of work your way through it. I think for a lot of kids, it's a, you know, it's a fun time of life. So I think we want to be careful to not take too much of that experience away from our youngsters. Mm-hmm. And I also think that I think as a parent, you know, if you're considering this, you know, are you being a helicopter parent? You know, are you, you know,
yeah.
Because I think, you know, obviously the, you know, those opposed to this, it's, you know, it's helicopter parenting. It's too much hand holding. You know, that they need that space and freedom to grow their own independence, you know, which I think is true. But, you know, yeah, this is definitely an interesting concept.
I mean, it's not like there's not FaceTime with your, you know, with somebody, or Zoom or Skype or text messaging. Like, I don't like my teacher, or I don't, well, this professor sucks, or this person sitting next to me, blah, 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 or I think I lost my car keys. What do I do? You know, I mean, nobody really communicates anymore. Everybody just does texting, and every once in a while you might get a FaceTime. But
right. Well, yeah, I mean, you've got people right at your fingertips now, right?
Yes.
It's so easy to stay connected. But I think there's also that element, you know, they talked about with, like, the loneliness, that sometimes I think we're so digitally focused that we're missing that human connection. So that's where I'm like, I'm kind of intrigued by this concept, because I think, like I said, I think if you can really keep it in check, if you were to do it, you know, on a small scale, like having some human connection, if you needed it and you didn't have family or friends or you were feeling alone or whatever, to have, you know, to know that you had some kind of a lifeline from along, you know, to help support you, I think, as you're stepping into, as a student, into your new rhythm and your new routine. I think especially as a freshman, that's where I see this maybe being helpful as a stepping stone.
This one company I'm looking at says hour of power, 1 hour with additional time is billed in 30-minute increments after the initial hour at $45 an hour. We'll customize your blah, 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 15-minute increments. I mean, it's almost like it's got a pay structure like lawyers.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear.
Well,
yeah, I don't. Go ahead.
I would have to say it's kind of like a remote parent, like a remote mom. And okay, I guess I get it. There's going to be.
And the other thing too, you know, it's like, it is like hiring a professional mom. And so the other aspect I wanted to actually mention, because I think it is kind of fun. You know, I think for moms, you know, these professional moms who are stepping in to help out, like, you know, maybe their kids have flown the nest. And so it probably is fun for them to be able to come in and help, you know, some of these kids who are off at college, feel like they have a little bit of joy in their day. But again, I think we just need to maybe be mindful that, you know, we're not doing too many of these tasks for our kids. I think if you're doing little things here and there, you know, it might be helpful and fun, but I think our kids need to learn how to, you know, make their own dinner and go grocery shopping and do these life skills. Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, if you do this rent-a-mom thing or this concierge thing and you're lonely, then this rent-a-mom person can introduce or help, you know, make connections between, you know, Susie and Kathy next door. So, you know, you can kind of like build a little team there. So,
sure.
You know, you're all using the same rent-a-mom, correct?
I don't know, but you probably are if you're on the same campus. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know. Okay. I mean, I guess, you know, college is expensive. You got books, you got housing, you got meals, you got transportation. You got to join this and pay for that. And parking was really ridiculous.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
That's like the worst. But, you know, so you're just adding another expense. Although, you know, this one on Mindy Knows isn't terribly expensive. Some of these others get to be a little bit pricey. But I hope by the time they get through their first year, they don't need to have Mindy Knows or, you know, a concierge or rent-a-mom. They should necessarily be over it, certainly by their first year, if not by their first semester. Would you agree with that one?
Well, you would hope, but, you know, you just don't know. I mean, each kid comes from a different background. And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know what makes certain kids hardier and more independent and others not. You know, that's just kind of the genetic, you know, we're all so different. So you would hope so, but, you know, I don't know if I think for some kids they have a harder go of it for whatever reason. And so I think striking that balance. And I also think before doing a service like this, I think you should also check in with your kid. Like, is this something that you think would be helpful? Because I think there's a lot of kids who would say, no, I don't want that. So I think there's also room for conversation to ask your college kid, is this something that you think would be helpful? And I don't think all kids would say, yeah, I really want that. I think a lot of kids are looking forward to, you know, not having, you know, a mom or dad over their shoulder. You know, that's where they get to set out on their own and start adventuring and start developing, you know, who they are that's separate from, you know, what they've always known being a part of a family unit.
Well, it's not necessarily a new phenomenon. I'm looking at a piece that was in Forbes in 2018. So, I mean, they've been going on for a while. So I guess there is a need, sadly so. But Holly Swenson, thanks for this discussion and kind of bringing this to our attention. I haven't been in it. So, you know, Holly is the Holly Swenson's the author of Stop, Drop, Grow, and Glow. Thanks, Holly, for being with us and having this discussion. It'll certainly give some people something to think about, something to consider, more options. So thank you for that. And ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way. Stay with us.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything. Helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours, at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for staying with us here after the break. I've got Dr. Michael Bussler with us, a very frequent guest. He's kind of my go-to finance economics guru as a professor of the same over at Stockton University. And wanted to bring him in because nobody seems to be talking about the debt crisis in the government spending anymore. We're talking about wokeness, and we're talking about immigration, and we're talking about law and order and lack of law and order and so forth, but we're not talking about the debt. And I think what I need to do is actually place Dr. Bussler in the gallery at the in Congress to hold up some posters as President Biden gives the State of the Union address. So, Dr. Bussler, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Denise. Always my pleasure to be here. If I thought I could get in there and wave those posters, I would do it.
Well, it's staggering to me that we can't see. Did I read it right that now our debt payment is $1.1 trillion each payment? Did I read that right?
No. Interest on the public debt, the public debt is $34 trillion now. Much of that has been incurred in the last five fiscal years, 2021, 22, 23, and 24. $11 trillion of that, almost a third of it, has been accumulated in the last 5 years. Now, So what's the problem? People say, well, what does that mean? Is that a problem? And the answer is yes, and it is for two reasons. One, interest on the public debt, and your number was a little high, the interest on the public debt this year will be $660 billion.
Okay.
And that number is climbing. Now, our whole defense budget is only about $800 billion. So we're now spending nearly as much on interest on the debt as we are on our defense budget.
Will you repeat that? That's staggering. Say that again.
Yeah. So we spent this year, we'll spend $660 billion on interest on the public debt. The amount of money in our whole defense budget for all the defense spending and all the money we give the countries, et cetera, is only about $800 billion. So this number is approaching. The interest annual interest payment is approaching the amount of money we spend on defense. And to make it worse, the interest on the public debt is going to grow a little bit faster than it has in the past. Why is that? Well, number one, the size of the debt is so large, $34 trillion. But number two, and more importantly, when the federal government runs a deficit, you know, they decide to spend $6 trillion. They only bring in $5 trillion in tax revenue. So they run a deficit of $1 trillion, which is about what they've been running, a little more in some years, each year. So how do they finance that? Where do they get the $1 trillion? Well, they sell government bonds, either usually 10 or 20-year bonds. There's no mechanism in place to ever pay those bonds back. Let me repeat that. There's no mechanism in place to ever pay that money back. So you say, well, the bond matures in 10 or 20 years. What do they do then? The answer is they sell new bonds to pay off the old bonds, and they just, what we say, roll over the debt. That's why the public debt keeps growing so much every year. Now, because they're doing that, much of the debt we have has been taken out in the last 10, 20 years when interest rates were relatively low. In the last 4, 5, 6 years, the interest rates were in the 1-1.5% range on 10 or 20 year government bonds. Now, because interest rates are much higher, the interest rate on 10 or 20 year government bonds is over 4%. So now we're refinancing old bonds that we took out at 1% with new bonds that we're paying 4%. Even if you don't incur any more debt, the debt is going to either double or more going forward. So this is a very serious problem. I started off by saying that there are two problems created by having a public debt. One is the annual interest expense is growing. It'll be up to $1 trillion probably in the next 5 years. So it is growing, and that's a problem. That's money you can't use for other government programs that could be beneficial to the American public. The second problem is if the federal government is pulling $34 trillion out of capital markets, it could lead to a capital shortage. So it could lead to not enough capital available for businesses to expand. If businesses need two things to expand, they need capital and labor. Well, we already have a labor shortage, so that's a problem. If we create a capital shortage, business may not be able to expand. When that happens, as demand in the economy is growing, you want business to expand to meet the demand. If they can't expand, the only thing left to do when demand is growing and you can't increase supply, the only thing left to do is to raise prices. So this could lead, and I wrote about this a few weeks ago in my Newsmax column, this could lead to a stagflation problem where you end up with a stagnant economy because business can't expand, they can't get capital, and they have to raise prices. So that leads to more inflation. So stagflation is when you have more inflation and stagnant economic growth. And that's my biggest fear going forward.
Are the people, the air quote experts on Wall Street, saying the same thing you are?
They're starting to. So forever, it seems, everybody kind of ignored the debt. Every president, really going back to John Kennedy when this deficit spending really started, every president recognizes we're adding to the public debt. But every president said, well, let's just do it. We'll kick the can down the road. The next president getting in, they're going to have to deal with it. But then every president did the same thing. So we kept kicking the can down the road. Nobody addressed the problem. Today, we're at the end of the road. We can't kick it down the road any further. We've got to start addressing this problem really as soon as possible. Now, the first thing you can do, and this is not going to be an easy problem to solve, admittedly, but the first thing you can do, you should do, and I've said this on your show before, the first thing you do when you're stuck in a deep hole is to stop digging. So the first thing you want to do is not run up as large deficits going into the future. So if you can come close to balancing the budget, then you won't incur any more deficits, and then you won't add to the public debt. Let me say one other thing. Back in the late 90s, from 96 to 2000, we actually ran a surplus in the budget, and we were able to pay down some of the debt and certainly didn't incur any more. You're running a surplus in the budget. But I said, well, how did that happen? Well, President Clinton, who was running for office in 96, recognized that the debt was a problem, and he said, look, we're going to have to get government down. When he gave a State of the Union speech, I believe in 96, he said, and his exact words were, the era of big government is over.
Over.
Mm-hmm. So working with Newt Gingrich, who was Speaker of the House at the time, they held the line on government spending. They were also able to increase tax revenue without raising tax rates. How did they do that? Well, President Clinton lowered the capital gains tax rate. It was at 28%. He lowered it to 20%. That encouraged so much more investment and so much more economic activity. The economy grew at a 4% rate each of the next 4 years. So tax revenue went up, even though the tax rate went down.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, revenue going up, holding the line on spending, not only did he balance the budget, he ran a surplus in the budget. I wish presidents from either party would just go back and take a look at that and see what that did for the economy, how it helped the public debt. It ended up keeping interest rates relatively low, not as low as they were going forward, but it keep them relatively low. So if the current leaders would take a look at that period and make some policy based on that, I think we'd be a lot better off going into the future.
All right. We're you've spoken about the deficit and the debt. Okay, good. What implications does this have for the states? I know that, the state of Florida, for instance, is running a surplus. So under DeSantis, they're trying to pay down the debt pretty quickly and pretty robustly and are being rather successful at that. But you've got California, who I would say is in deep, deep, deep trouble.
And getting deeper.
Yes. And so what position does that put the federal government in to keep the state of California afloat? You see what I'm saying? Or any
yes.
other state?
So theoretically, each state takes care of itself. Now, the federal government won't let a state go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government would likely, again, there's politics involved here, but would likely come in and help. I don't know if that's what Governor Newsom is thinking. He keeps increasing spending by giving away all these things. He's now encouraging illegal immigrants to now come to California. Well, they'll get free health care, and he's giving money out to them. I think in San Francisco, you can get all kinds of free money. I think the total amounted to almost $2,000 a month. Well, cities and states can't afford to keep paying that. So what they've got to do in order to get their budget balanced, I wouldn't suggest raising taxes. California especially already has some of the highest, maybe the highest taxes in the country. Look, everybody pays federal income tax, Social Security tax, et cetera. California has a state income tax, which the rate, it's a progressive rate, but it could be as high as 13.3%. Now, somebody who's contributing to the economy and, you know, he's making a good income, he turns around and looks at how much he's paying. 39% in federal income tax, 13% in state income tax, more in Social Security tax, a sales tax when he buys things. And he looks around and says, you know, over half of what I'm making is going to the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see, even though California is a very desirable place to live, that's why you see so many people leaving California. New York is having the same problem. So the point is, you can't raise taxes anymore. You're already losing population because you've raised taxes. The only thing to do is to get government spending down and stop all these giveaways that the government in California is doing, which is creating a huge deficit in the state. When Newsom came into office, there was a surplus in the budget, and there's now a deficit. So states have a similar problem. Now, let me also say that some states, I live in New Jersey, and New Jersey requires the governor to submit a balanced budget every year. So New Jersey doesn't end up with a big public debt problem. That
mm-hmm.
might be a good answer, although I don't know how they'll do it in California, but that could be an answer for states like California?
Well, you know, California's also got this you know, bullet train or this high speed rail that they were going to do from, where was it, Modesto down to Los Angeles, and it's billions and billions and billions over budget. The federal government stepped in and loaned them even more money. Under Trump, they stopped it. Now the thing is going from, you know, it's like 1/10 of the what it is, and they're still over budget. So do you, in that particular, that's where the federal government kind of steps in and helps out a state when we're here in other states and, you know, we're on the hook for this. Do they just stop the thing and just abandon it altogether? I mean, is that some kind of messaging that we ought to, or, you know, policy that we ought to begin?
Yeah, certainly something that we ought to look at. They put in these projects that are multi-billion dollar projects. On paper, they look like a good idea. But when you try to execute on some of these things, the costs are much greater than what they budget. And it ends up that, and I'm not even sure that it's feasible to be able to build a train like that. So the state of California went to the federal government and said, here's a transportation issue. The government has funds to work with states and local municipalities on public transportation issues. Somehow they convinced the government to back this multi-billion dollar project. And I don't think they did enough research on it to see more closely what the cost would be, and can you physically do it? You know, you're talking about running along the coast there. There's all kinds of issues. There's mountains, you have the ocean is right there. So there's a lot of issues that they have to deal with. They should have done a more comprehensive study before they went ahead with this.
I think you and I have spoken about it before. If you actually eliminated a government department, a government agency, let's say the Department of Education, just close the whole thing up, terminated everybody, canceled leases, you know, all those other kinds of things. That's like a deck chair off the Titanic, isn't it? It doesn't help,
well,
right?
So it could help. So education is really the responsibility of the state. Not the federal government. Although the federal government sets minimum standards to make sure, you know, no state is performing poorly. But once you adhere to the minimum standards, it's really up to the state to finance their education and to determine what the standard should be above what the federal government has set. In that instance, the federal government could do away, I think, with the Department of Education, or maybe have something relatively small just to make sure everybody is in compliance with law. But I don't know whether we'd miss the Department of Education if it wasn't there. I believe President Trump suggested doing away with that, and Congress got all up in arms about it. Never went through. But if you're going to get government spending down, you're going to have to take a look at all these things we're spending money on and say, do we really need to keep doing that? I mean, the Department of Education is a huge bureaucracy. And do we need it? Is it doing more harm than good? And it's certainly costing whatever their budget is, you know, well into the tens of millions, I'm sure. Do we really need to spend that? To get government spending down, you're going to have to take a look at these programs. You know, part of the problem is when the government budgets, they say, look, here's how much we spent last year. I need, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8% more. So we're going to have to budget this. What we should do, and Jimmy Carter actually suggested this. He was a business person, so he suggested it. Didn't go anywhere. I haven't heard anybody do it since. What they should do is what we call a zero-based budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just saying this year we need 5% more than last year, go back and take a look at all of it and make sure we need all of it. Because what happens with government spending, when you get to the end of the year, people in government say, look, hurry up and spend this money.
Yeah, because
if
we
don't
have a leftover,
spend it, we're not going to get more next year. Yeah, so they ought to take a look at perhaps a zero-based budgeting, and that might be a way to get rid of this huge government spending problem that we have.
You know, there used to be some chatter called the line item veto.
Yes.
As a matter of exercise, if you were to put your students over there at Stockton University to kind of look at it in line item veto, that would be a fun exercise, would it not?
Yes, it certainly would. And it's something that I think makes a lot of sense, because what happens is when Congress wants to get something passed and you have some people that are resistant, that may not vote for it, you say to them, look, vote for this and I'll have a multi-million-dollar project going to your state and it's going to help your state. So we have all the, they call these earmarks. So we have a whole lot of these earmarks in there to get these bills passed. Now, if you had a line item veto, president could go down and say, wait a minute, we don't need this. We don't need that. So he can veto parts of it, some of the programs and parts of the budget, without vetoing the entire budget. Now Congress can still override the veto, just as they would any other veto. But at least this is a method to help the president keep the budget down and keep government spending down. It's been suggested a number of times in the past. Congress never goes for it, but I think it's something, a line item veto, I think it's something that could make a lot of sense.
Do you have a lot of faith in what is known as the Congressional Budget Office?
You know, I used to, because they're supposed to be impartial and they're supposed to just look at something objectively and come out with their forecast of what's likely to happen going forward. I used to have faith in them, but in the last few years, it seems like there's a little more politics involved, which is overshadowing some of the objectivity that they should have. So I'd like to see the Congressional Budget Office is needed. I'd like to see them making themselves more objective and less involved with politics. Now, they'll say they're doing that, but again, you look at some of the things they came out with and you question whether that's the case.
What keeps you up at night? What's the burr under your saddle?
So what keeps me up at night? I guess when my wife is taking up too much of the bed and I get pushed off to the side, that keeps me up at night. But yeah. So what really worries me is the overall direction the economy has taken. You know, Biden tonight, he's going to give a speech, State of the Union. He's going to blame inflation on corporate greed, saying corporations are price gouging.
Shrinkflation. Yeah.
Exactly. And then he's going to say, look, people are paying, if they're paying the same amount as they did before, the product's half the size that it was. So we need to work on that. And, you know, these banks, when people are late on a credit card payment, they could be charged a fee as much as $32. Well, I'm going to help Americans. I'm going to keep that down to a maximum of $8. None of that rhetoric and that credit card reduction, it's really not going to have much of a significant impact on inflation. You know, you know, what he ought to do is take a look at what brought this inflation on, and what brought it on initially was his change in energy policy. Energy, by the time it filters through the economy, energy accounts for about 30% of the consumer price index. Right after Biden got into office, he canceled the Keystone Pipeline, withdrew leases to drill on federal lands, made the permitting process very difficult, and he told banks, don't lend to the petroleum industry because there's no future. That reduced the supply of energy and push prices up. Now, Biden's going to come back and say, wait a minute, we're producing more oil today than when I got into office. And that's true. The higher prices have encouraged oil companies to produce more. But had he not done the things he did, we would be producing much more. Yeah. The Keystone Pipeline alone carries nearly 1 million barrels a day. So we'd be producing a lot more and we'd be able to keep the price of energy down. If we change administrations, which I hope happens in November, the Republican, likely to be Donald Trump, he'll get into office, he'll approve the Keystone Pipeline right away. He'll allow companies to drill on federal lands. He'll take some of those needless regulations out of the permitting process, and you'll start to see more production of oil and gas, and the price of gas, which is now in the $3.30 range on average nationally, will go back down to the $2.50 range. That will help keep inflation down going forward. The second thing to do, as we talked about, is you have to take excess demand out of the economy that was created by these huge government spending deficits. So come close to balancing the budget, increase the production of energy, and you'll see the inflation rate come down and prices stabilize.
So under drill, baby, drill, you think that there's a good bit of cure there, not a full-blown solution, but it will lessen the hurt. Is that right?
I think it'll be a huge amount of cure. As I said, energy accounts for 30% of the CPI by the time it filters through it everywhere. If you bring energy prices down, you're going to bring inflation down. You may be able to see in some areas prices actually go down. Remember, Biden's going to tout, I brought inflation way down. That doesn't mean you brought prices down. It just means they're not going up quite as fast as they have in the last couple of years. What you need to do is bring inflation way down. When he took office, inflation was 1.4%, and people didn't even think about it. You know, you went to the grocery store every week, and everything was pretty much the same price as it was last week. Now you go to the grocery store, you're looking, people are not able to afford what they did when he came
into office.
Yeah, so he's going to say, look, the economy is good. I don't know why people aren't approving what I'm doing. And the reason is prices on average have gone up nearly 20% since Biden came into office. Incomes haven't gone up anywhere near that. So what does that mean? It says to an average American, I can't afford to buy the things I bought in 2021 when Biden took office. So now I have to cut back on some things, or I have to buy cheaper things, or I have to look for things with less quality. So my standard of living has gone down since the president came into office. That's why everybody feels so bad about the Biden economy. Yeah, we've had growth, and yeah, the unemployment rate's down, and yeah, I can see all these things. But what I feel is a reduction in the standard of living. All the rhetoric can influence maybe my thinking, my opinions. You can't influence the way people feel. And people feel badly about the Biden economy because they're not able to afford the things they were able to buy when Biden took office.
Well, I said on, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we are a sad country. You know, Americans are sad, and we're sad because of many things. We're sad of lack of law and order. We're sad because of quality of jobs, customer service, certainly the cost of things. And, if you go back to the drill, baby, drill thing, you know, oil isn't just used for transportation. I mean, oil is in pretty much everything that we touch. You know, various kinds of plastics and medicines and agriculture and all those other kinds of things. And so if we get the energy piece in some kind of line, then some of those prices of normal consumer goods outside of gasoline will start coming down too.
Exactly.
And maybe we wouldn't be so sad, right?
That's exactly right. Because energy prices also affect, look, when they're making products, they have to buy energy to run the factories.
Yeah, precisely.
So energy can filter through the economy, and if you can bring energy prices down, that will start to end the inflation problem.
Dr. Michael Bussler, thanks for, you know, staying with us here and putting things in perspective and teaching us a little bit. We always appreciate your expertise and your insight. So well done. Thanks for being with us. And ladies and gentlemen, we're so glad that you could be with us, and we hope you'll come back soon. Thanks.
The Conversation Starter. This is Talk 92.1 WDDQ 8L Valdosta.